You know, I can still remember stuff as a kid in Alamosa, the racing, and I don't know how many people remember it, but the Olympic Trials was here. Everybody, I think, can remember that. And when the Olympic Trials was here, I was still a kid. But the great runners for the U.S. were here in Alamosa. And where they stayed was in a tent at the park. And I remember my dad took me down there so I could see the great runners. You know, back then in the 70s and 60s and stuff, running was different. There was a lot of people that ran. And maybe it's lost so much luster. I don't think it has. I think it's still the same thing. I think some people are, they won't make time for it. That's something you have to make time for, you know, to be good at running. But anybody can run. You put a pair of shoes on and you can go down the block. If you can only go one block, that's fine. If you can go two, that's fine too. But running is a different way of life. And if you can get to it, you can enjoy it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. This is Marty Jones, and my guests today are Pat Milgaris and Ed Creary. Welcome, gentlemen, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, you bet, guys. Glad to be here.
So we're going to start with Pat first. Pat Milgaris is a native of Alamosa. He's now living and working in Manhattan, Kansas, the Little Apple, out in the middle of the Flint Hills, some of the most beautiful countryside there is in the state of Kansas. And Pat, you have a long and rich history of running. So tell us about how that plays a factor when you handle race days.
Yeah, well, I have a love for running. I mean, I don't run myself as much anymore, but I still do it, and it's a little bit. And as a race timer, you know, it's really important to me that people that are there, it's their race day. It's their marathon experience, if you will. Even if it's a 5K, it's something that they're passionate about and that they're excited about doing. And so as a race timer, you know, really one of my goals is to make that experience as good as possible. And I do have that perspective of knowing what it's like to finish a race, small, short race, long race, whatever it might be. And I like to think that whenever people are crossing the finish line, which is where I'm usually at, that it's, you know, it's an accomplishment. It's a period, a time of accomplishment. And again, as a race timer, you not only want to have their time correct, which is, of course, important, place and time, but it's something that, you know, just making the finish line lively, making it exciting, making it welcoming. And so a lot of times when I work with volunteers around the finish line, it's important to me that they're bringing the energy as well.
That's good. And Pat, you have a long history of running yourself. Tell us a little bit about your running background.
I used to run around the neighborhoods where your studio is, actually. you know, I grew up right in Alamosa and spent a lot of years running up and down the roads right there and along the Rio Grande River. Eventually was a student at Alamosa High School, was a four-time state champion, twice in cross-country, twice in track and field. Had the great fortune of running for Joe V. Hill at Adams State College for 4 years and was part of six national championship teams, actually, four in collegiate cross-country, two in USA track and field cross-country. And I became a four-time All-American at Adams State. I'm actually in the Hall of Fame there at Adams State now. It's really quite an honor because it's, you know, a lot of big names and really successful runners and athletes that have been that have gone through Adams State over the years.
And in addition to that, you also wrote a book about Coach Vigil called Chasing Excellence, The Remarkable Life and Inspiring Vigilosophy of Coach Joe I. Vigil. An excellent book, by the way, one that I really enjoyed reading.
Well, thank you. It's won a few awards. Won the Ben Franklin Award from the Independent Book Publishers Association. That was one of the great things. It was a finalist in the Colorado Humanities Contest. So we're real excited. But for me personally, it was the greatest professional accomplishment that I've ever had. I just think knowing the person that Joe Vigil is and being able to capture that story and write about such a wonderful, remarkable coach, but also wonderful, remarkable man was, again, just one of the real joys of my professional career.
Indeed. And Ed, Ed Creary is here with us. Larry Gosa tells us you inherited Manassas Pioneer Days run from him, and you've been organizing it with your family for the past 40 or more years. And so tell us a little bit about your experience with that.
Well, I picked it up a couple of years. I was away at college, and when I came back, we picked it up, and he had started it to get these high school kids ready for the cross-country season, which I think is a great deal. In fact, most of the towns in the valley had a pre-race before the season, which was awesome for the kids. But we still go with the Manassas run, and we've done it now for 47 years. Larry did it for 2 or 3 years, and then we took it over after that. And Mike Bush helps us with it. Mike Bush was he went to Grand Junction, ran for them. But he came here, and we started a Roadrunner Club of the Valley here, and we took it over as the Roadrunner Club. And since the Roadrunner Club isn't here anymore, but we still do the race all these years. And my family, of course, and friends help with the race a lot. And Mr. Malgaris is an extremely important part of it with the timekeeping. He does the chip timing, which is awesome. It's perfect every time. And the race, it's not like any other race that I've run. It's a small town in Manassas. And they have a huge parade and stuff. It's just a big party.
The best in the valley, by the way.
Yeah, it's just a huge party going on with a big carnival. But as to do with the race, a cannon starts the race, and when they shoot it off, everybody screams and yells because they're shocked. And, of course, all the car alarms go off, and the runners take off. And there's about 550 runners, and they take off and run by the little hills in Manassas and come back to town and finish right on Main Street. Beautiful area, and thousands of people are there at the finish line. It's unbelievable for a small town to have a race like this, to be honest with you. And it's a delight to run it. I've run it many times, and it's a delight to put it on.
Yeah, excellent. So, Pat.
You know, Marty, I would add to that, yeah. Maybe this is what you were going to ask me about, but Ed and his wife, they're very humble about their contributions to this. I just admire them so much. A race of this size, year after year, just doesn't happen in communities the size of Manassas. It's just remarkable the amount of work that goes into this event each year. And each year they pull it off. And I tell you what, the runners really have a good time, and they really enjoy coming back to this event. The database that I keep for the race, it's amazing how many repeat participants come back every year. I bet it's easily in the hundreds, you know, and to think that you're going to reserve that weekend year after year after year, that just doesn't happen in communities all across this country. It really doesn't happen. So big kudos because, again, I see Ed and his wife, Leah, they work so hard, and they're not doing it to boost themselves. They do it because it's a great event that is, a boost to that community and to that celebration that goes on down there.
And I might add that it's a pretty competitive race. This is not just a run in the park for people. There are serious runners who participate in this.
The one year that they set the record was skee ball. John Escobel, who everybody knows, ran for Adams State, held, I believe, the mile, the record for the U.S. in the mile. Great runner. And he ran it, and we ran the first mile, and there's about six of us in a pack or seven or something like that. And we were just moving along pretty good, and one of the kids from Adams State went by us, and skee ball goes, "Nobody beats me today." And he took off. He had just gotten back from Europe, I think, from running. And he took off, and he ran a 15 flat after starting the first mile with the rest of us. And we all ran around in the 16s. The other five of us were in the 16s. But, man, what a race that was that day. He flew. And he's not the only one. There's been, I don't know how many Adams State runners show up there. And people not even from Adams State, from other colleges have shown up. We had one coach that came about 3-4 years in a row from, I think it was Oklahoma or something. Pat might remember the name. I can't remember his name. But he brought teams there to compete. And there's been some great female, male, older runners have run there. The great mountain runners have run there. And it's just an exciting thing. But we bill it as a family run. We have 5-year age groups, which you never see anywhere. And we go 5 deep in each age group with overall winners, too. So it's really exciting, and it means a lot, I think, to the community and to the people down there.
And it's well-publicized. You know, that's one reason, I'm sure, that it draws so many participants is the fact that you promote the run, and not just in Alamosa, but across the state.
Yeah, Pat does a lot of that for us. He registers it for us and stuff, which is awesome. He runs a pre-registration for us too, which is awesome. It takes a lot of the load off my wife and I. Although we do registration on the Friday before, we sit there after the parade, before the rodeo, we sit there all day and take applicants of the race. And then the day of the race, not as many show up, hopefully, that haven't registered. So we get those taken care of because Pat has an extremely big workload because we are real time sensitive on this race. We have to be done before the parade starts, and it will be done every year.
Pat, what kind of issues do you have with a race of that many people? Because you're doing chip timing on every single participant.
Yeah, to get an idea, chip timing is really about radio frequency signals. And so we've got the antennas that will read a radio frequency signal, which is what that small chip that is attached to the bib number. It's giving out a small radio frequency, basically. And so if somebody gets in between our antenna and the person coming in, there could be some interference. Maybe that chip doesn't read. Sometimes moisture gets on those chips, and that will affect the chip reads. Somebody might bend their bib while they're putting it on, or they'll put a pin through the chip, and it will cause that chip not to work. Those are some of the issues we have. There's one thing that we find at a lot of finish lines is people who run without bib numbers. They really make it a little more complicated for those of us at the finish line because you don't know, did they not have a bib number on or did their chip not work? And so you spend a little bit of time trying to figure out the complication of that. And so those are the kinds of things that slow down some of the results. One thing about this past year's race, I was so excited because I used a little bit different system at the finish line. And I believe we had, I can't remember the exact number, but I think it was 474 finishers. And we had 472 chip reads. So there's only two runners out of those 474 that the chip didn't fire for some reason. So I was pretty excited about that. That's beating the industry standard when you only missed two out of 474.
Well, you're a national champion. You should beat the industry standard, right?
Yeah. Chasing it. I'm still chasing my excellence on that regard.
Excellent. So do you think that the popularity of this particular race is something that is unusual across the state and across the country? Is there a trend of, I mean, back in the 70s and 80s when running took off, there were lots of events. Now it seems like there are fewer events, but yours, man, for 47 years, still a strong, strong race.
You know, it's a different race. I think Pat will agree with that. It's not just a race. It's a family reunion. It's a lot of families there. A lot of people are related to me and to Pat. You know, people in the Valley know each other. You know that. And actually, I ran around with Pat's older brother when he was in high school with me. And we go there and we meet each other and have a good time. That's what it is. It's a good, good time, that race. And it's not just a race. It's I know that the Snyders ran, well, they've run every year. They came up and they wanted to help sponsor the race, and they wanted Team Snyder on the race. And we put it on there for them. And they wanted to race as a team, their family. And it's a family get together and race. It's not like, I don't think any other race I've ever run in. I've run in a lot of races, and it's not like any other race I've ever run in.
So are you guys both still actively running in races, 5Ks, 10Ks, things of that sort?
I'm running around town, but I run a little bit for health still, not competitively anymore. I've kind of lost that competitive edge that I once had, but I still think that running is one of the greatest activities you can do. Aside from the health benefits, there's mental health benefits. So I'm going to run till they put me in the ground, I believe.
You know, our motto for our race club when we started it was some people run because it makes them feel good or look good. Runners race because they want to. And it's the truth. We do. We want to race. We enjoy it. It's different. It's a different society. And runners are different. They are. We're not joggers. We're racers.
You know, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, Ed, because every morning, or practically every morning, I walk with a few friends and a couple of dogs in the riparian park in the north end of Alamosa. And we see people who are out there jogging on the trails. The other day, though, we saw somebody who was running the trails. Not jogging, but he was moving along at a really good clip. Maybe since it's the start of the semester, maybe he was an Adams State cross-country runner just doing a little bit of individual work. But yeah, we do get runners here in the valley.
You know, when I was a kid, Coach V. Hill, he actually had a cousin that lived by where Pat lived, his parents lived, and my dad lived across the street. And so my dad grew up knowing Coach V. Hill very well. And he was our next-door neighbor west of town. As an adult, I got to know him. And he would invite us high school kids. Back then, it was okay to do that, to come run with the college kids. And we were just high school kids, and we weren't great. We were just trying to run, you know. And he would give us pointers and run with us. And he'd let us run with him. And, you know, I can still remember stuff as a kid in Alamosa, the racing. And I don't know how many people remember it, but the Olympic Trials was here. Everybody, I think, can remember that. And when the Olympic Trials was here, I was still a kid. But the great runners for the U.S. were here in Alamosa. And where they stayed was in a tent at the park. And I remember my dad took me down there so I could see the great runners. You know, back then in the 70s and 60s and stuff, running was different. There was a lot of people that ran. Maybe it's lost so much luster. I don't think it has. I think it's still the same thing. I think some people are, they won't make time for it. That's something you have to make time for, you know, to be good at running. But anybody can run. You put a pair of shoes on and you can go down the block. If you can only go one block, that's fine. If you can go two, that's fine too. But running is a different way of life. And if you can get to it, you can enjoy it. And one of these things is like I was raised here in Alamosa around Coach V. Hill and Adams State glory days. And we can all remember the runners, you know, the ski balls and the V Hills and all them that were real great runners at Adams State. And also the great marathoners that were here in Alamosa trying to make the Olympic team. We can all remember that, my age. Now, of course, I'm in my late 60s now, but...
Oh, just a young pup.
Yeah, I'm still going. But, you know, for years and years, you know, and Pat the same way, we didn't run less than 10 miles a day. And that wasn't just in college. That was later in life, and we still do it, you know. It's just the way it is.
So what are some of the biggest races you guys have participated in? And for Pat, that includes serving as a timing director.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as a timer, I've timed races up to about 12 or 1,300 runners. But, I ran the New York City Marathon, and I ran the Boston Marathon, the Chicago Marathon. And at the time, those ones weren't as big as they are today, but they were still 25 to 30,000 runners. I can vividly, my biggest goal was to run the New York City Marathon and run over the Verrazano Narrows Bridge from Staten Island going into Brooklyn. And I never knew this until I got there that day, but they actually start the race at three different starting lines, and one of them goes directly over the top part of that bridge, another one goes on the bottom part of that bridge, and then I think the men and the women are staggered on one, either the top or the bottom part of that bridge. That's where the three starting lines were. But it's just unbelievable. You know, it's 2 miles to run right across that bridge. And I'm thinking I'm a mile or mile and a half across that bridge. And there's some people that are back there just starting. And so if you can just imagine this, you know, the Verrazano is a very unique, iconic bridge of New York City. And if you can just imagine it filled with runners at this point in time, it was just amazing. It was just amazing. That's I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what Ed's talking about. I mean, runners, we might seem a little crazy, and we are, but, you know, to have those kinds of experiences, I think that's what makes maybe some of the sacrifice, some of the work well worth it.
Ed, what about you?
Well, probably the best one I ever remember was, and I'm sure Pat's run all of them here around Colorado and Utah and New Mexico, just like me. And I've enjoyed a lot of them. And I enjoyed the ones in Denver and the marathon, the Mayor's Cup, the Governor's Cup, whatever they call it now. And then I've run the Salt Lake Desert News Marathon. That's a good one. You get to finish down Main Street. It's bleachers on the sides of both roads. I think you have to run 3 hours or less to go down Main Street or something like that. But it's a real good run. New Mexico's that zoo run and stuff is just awesome there. But I'll tell you what, the Boulder back then when I was a little younger, I put in one time, and I put in with Dan Garcia and some of the runners from Adams State that were still competing, and I put in with them, and I got thrown in the AA group, not the competitive runners, but the AA group, which is the front runners. Yeah. And I was in the front line ready to go. I'll tell you, I was fired up and ready to race that race. But I remember taking off, and I looked back. I don't know, Pat, probably about four blocks, let's go straight. And I'd look back, and it looked like a sea of heads behind me. It was, what, 20,000, 30,000 runners that year, something like that. And, of course, I've run probably the best run I ever enjoyed was the Pikes Peak Marathon. I really enjoyed that one. And the Creed Mountain Run back then was really an awesome one to run.
And that one's still going on.
Yeah. Charlie Vigil, I chased him on that one. And, of course, he was beating me, of course. But I was trying to keep up, you know, and we hit that hill in the middle, and, oh, my goodness, he kept going. I wish I did. It was a tough run.
Pablo, he's still a billy goat up the mountains. He can just rip right up those mountains. It doesn't stop him at all.
Pablo is always a great runner.
And still is. Yeah. So, well, it's really been fun talking to you guys. And do you have anything else that you'd like to share with us about philosophy of running or events or recommendations for people who are just getting started?
Well, I'll tell you some fun stuff I was kind of learning recently that, you know, obviously the pandemic put a pinch in a lot of activities, but running was definitely one of those. But running since the pandemic has actually regained the momentum that it had before the pandemic. And last year there was more than 50 million Americans that ran in road races across the country. So I think it just speaks to the popularity of it. That's about 15% of the population from what I think the statistic I was looking at. And I think that's pretty interesting. The other thing, and you asked earlier about the Manassas Pioneer Days, the 5K is the most popular event in the United States. There's about 9.1 million people who ran a 5K last year. And I just think that that's pretty remarkable. To think of that. And you'd also, one thing you had mentioned was, is it a competitive race? Well, get this, according to a database of 5Ks across the country, you would have to finish faster than 18 minutes and 24 seconds to be in the top 1% all across the United States. And Ed, you know what the winning time was this year, right? About 16:50. Yeah. So basically, the winner of Manassas, you can think of that person as being in the top 1% of all 5K runners across the United States. So it's pretty cool. You know, I just think it's neat to think about those things. And running is just as strong as it always was. It's just there's a lot of other things that happen all around us also. But running is one of those cool things that a lot of people still like to do.
Ed, any final words?
Well, I'd like to invite everybody out next year from NASA. We'll be there again, won't we, Pat?
That's right.
And we'd like to invite you to come to the race. We'd like it bigger and better every year.
Do you know the date for it already?
No, I don't. They haven't released that. I'm not part of that committee. But our race will be when they have their, at the end of July, usually around the 20th to 26th, right in there, that Saturday. And we'd like to invite everybody out to see us.
Well, thank you, guys. I've been speaking with Pat Melgaris and Ed Creary about running in the Valley, specifically the Manassas Pioneer Days 5K run. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks for the invite.
Thank you, guys. You bet. Thank you.
And we'll be right back with our string of outdoor conditions and news, as well as some upcoming events after this brief sponsor break.
Join us every Wednesday at Mercadillo en el Río at the Rio Grande Farm Park. Únete a nosotros todos los miércoles, Mercadillo en el Río, locado en el Parque de la Granja del Río Grande. Grab dinner for the night and groceries for the week. Compra una cena y los comestibles de la semana. What started as a farm stand with a few farmers has grown into a thriving market with fresh, organic produce grown right on the property. Lo que comenzó como un puesto de granja con unos pocos agricultores se ha convertido en un próspero mercado con productos frescos y orgánicos cultivados en la propiedad. Our community farmers are joined by local artists, musicians, performers, and makers. A los agricultores de nuestra comunidad se unen artistas, músicos y criadores locales. We hope you'll join us this summer at Rio Grande Farm Park.
Esperamos que te unas a nosotros este verano en Rio Grande Farm Park.
Every Wednesday from 3 to 7 p.m. through October 2nd.
Todos los miércoles de 3 a 7 p.m. hasta el 2 de octubre.
Experience a farmer's market with a heartbeat.
Disfruta de un mercado de agricultores con corazón.
Welcome back. We have some conditions for you. August has delivered another 1.27 inches of rain so far, giving us a total of 5.61 inches of rain going back to May. The rains have helped keep the valley refreshed and cool, but we have to say summer rains are no substitute for deep winter snowpack in the mountains that surround the valley. On Monday, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's, NOAA's, National Centers for Environmental Information calculated July's globally average temperature was 2.18 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average, meaning it was more likely than not to be the planet's warmest month in their 175-year database. This July was just 0.05 degrees warmer than July 2023, the previous warmest month in the NOAA data set. NOAA is also showing that La Niña is likely this winter and may appear closer to the end of summer. They are currently predicting a 66% chance of a La Niña by the end of September. La Niña is the cooling of Pacific Ocean surface temperatures near the equator that has potential to bring large amounts of wintertime moisture to the continental U.S. Now we have some local and statewide outdoor news for you. Last weekend, an out-of-state woman went off trail while hiking on South Zapata Lake Trail above Zapata Falls and was reported missing. The next day, she was found by Alamosa Volunteer Search and Rescue and assisting search agencies. In a recent release, AVSAR said the hiker wanted to venture up past the falls further, but her hiking partner didn't feel comfortable, so they stayed behind while she continued on. The hiker was forced to move off trail after she was briefly charged and chased by a black bear, forcing her even further off trail. AVSAR and a few other search agencies were then alerted and responded to the area. A drone was deployed and was used for the majority of the day to no avail. Efforts were made throughout the night to find the hiker, but they were also unsuccessful. Then the next morning, a Reach medical helicopter spotted her thanks to her bright red hoodie. Fremont County Search and Rescue Canine Eddie was the first to make contact with her. Luckily, she was able to walk out without medical assistance and was only sunburned and dehydrated. Previously transplanted boreal toads have successfully reproduced in a wetland above Pitkin, leaving researchers and biologists elated at the success of the reintroduction effort. They've been releasing tadpoles at this bog near Pitkin since 2018, and for the first time they found that they are reproducing on their own. The boreal toads are high-elevation amphibians that spend their winters buried deep under the snow, but they've been endangered for a number of years now due to a rapidly spreading fungal infection. Biologists at the Native Aquatic Species Restoration Facility here in Alamosa have been trying to attack the fungus by giving the toads a chemical wash and by releasing lab-born toad tadpoles into new bodies of water. There are similar experiments happening all over the state, and most recently a boreal toad reintroduction above Creed and Lake City is taking place in part by CPW and the Denver Zoo Conservation Alliance. Three gray wolf pups from Grand County's Copper Creek Pack were caught on camera this past weekend, confirming that the recently reintroduced gray wolves are reproducing in their new habitat. According to CPW, each of the pups seen playing in the video all appear to be in good health and weigh around 40 to 50 pounds. It was first reported in June that a single wolf pup had been sighted in the Copper Creek Pack, and now there are three. The Colorado Geographic Naming Advisory Board meets this Monday, August 26th, to again discuss the proposed name change of 14,000-foot Kit Carson Peak. With a revolving door of proposals, Tabawatch Ute Peak is at the top of the list right now. The discussion has been ongoing at the state level for some time due to a couple of key reasons. first and foremost for a location with a sacred history such as this, all 574 federally recognized indigenous tribes must be informed and surveyed. Secondly, not everyone wants Kit Carson Peak to lose its identity. Chiefly among those is Kit Carson's great-grandson, John Carson. Kit Carson Peak, although one of Colorado's 14ers, is not a federally recognized named peak by the federal government. Instead, it's the collection of three peaks, Columbia, Challenger, and Kit Carson, that is federally recognized as Kit Carson Mountain. The locals of Crestone, Colorado, with no clear view of Crestone Peak and Crestone Needle, have long referred to it as Mount Crestone. The meeting will be live streamed starting at 5 p.m. on Monday, August 26th. You can find the link by going to dnr.colorado.gov and searching Geographic Naming Advisory Board. We'll continue to follow this story and update you at alamosacitizen.com. We want to hear what your favorite trails are. This September, we will be discussing some of the valley's most popular, well-traveled trails. But we also want to know the trails that you are using. You can let us know by emailing info@alamosacitizen.com or sending us a field report of your favorite trails. You can view all of our previous field reports with some of our favorite trails on the Alamosa Citizen YouTube channel. Next up, we have a look at some upcoming outdoor events. The Mosca Hooper Conservation District is having a weekend of agricultural water education events, starting Friday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Sky High Event Complex in Monte Vista. There will be a soil and water connection workshop with Annie Overland. Dinner from Gosser Sausage will be provided. Then Saturday, August 24th, is the SLV Farmer to Farmer Field Day. This starts at 8 a.m. and the tour will stop at a few valley farms until about 3 p.m. The tour starts and ends at the USDA Service Center on the southwest corner of County Road 10 North and US 285 near the town of Center. There is a meeting at Antonito on Tuesday, August 27th on the Cruces Basin Wilderness Area in the neighboring Carson National Forest of northern New Mexico. The meeting is about the plan to improve the wetlands for recreation, fishing, and wildlife habitat. It will begin at 6 p.m. at the Chavez Southwest Market on the main drag through Antonito. This is a great opportunity to learn more about what New Mexico residents refer to as their wetland jewel. The second Alamosa Riverfront Project Community Meeting is August 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Shooting Stars Cultural Center at the corner of 8th and Ross in Alamosa. This meeting will be focused on reaching the Hispanic community with full translations available. The Alamosa Riverfront Project is headed by the Rio Grande Headwaters Restoration Project, which aims to utilize Alamosa's low and slow stretch of river near Cole Park as a place of recreation and connection. And we talked earlier with Pat and Ed about community runners, and there's plenty of opportunities to join some on a run each Thursday with SLV Great Outdoors on a Nature RX community walk and run. The runs start at 5:30 p.m. at the Alamosa Disc Golf Course. And if you are interested in a race, coming up on August 31st, is the Creed Mountain Run. You can just do an internet search for Creed Mountain Run to get registration information. And if you're like me and more of a bicyclist than a runner, there are bike rides with SLV Go on Tuesday evenings that start at 5:30 p.m. In September, I believe that we're going to be riding in the vicinity of the Alamosa Riparian Park. Just meet at 5:30. You'll want a bike that's a mountain bike or a commuter bike, something with tires at least, say, 35 millimeters in width. And that ends this episode of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. The Outdoor Citizen is supported by SLV Great Outdoors and is produced by Owen Woods. Join us next time when we'll talk to the Boys and Girls Club about their outdoor programming. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are topics that you'd like to hear in a future episode, send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle, and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. This has been Marty Jones with the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you outdoors.
Are you a member of the Monta Vista Co-op? Now is the best time to become a member and take advantage of the benefits. Propane, oil, crop protection, drone application, farm and ranch supplies, and much more. Visit mvcoop.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram for all company sales, promotions, community events, and job opportunities. Serving our community since 1949, the Monta Vista Co-op is committed to providing the highest quality products and services. Call us at 719-852-5181 or visit our website, mvcoop.com, today. Monta Vista Co-op, community committed, agriculturally driven.